Well, good evening, and you're in the right place for tonight's call with Janine Roth, Being Fierce About Being Kind to Yourself. Janine will be with us at the top of the hour. Janine has received many questions about this topic and so many more that she'll be answering tonight. A few upcoming events. Janine's only West Coast workshop is next month, March 13th and 14th at the Sofitel Hotel in Redwood City, California. And just a few spots remain open, so if you're interested in finding out more about it, you can call 703-401-0871, or you can register online and find out much more at www.janineroth.com. Janine's retreat is also offered only two times a year, and it's 6 days of immersion and loving support and exquisite consciousness about food and close personal attention from Janine and her wonderful co-teachers. So the May retreat, May 12th to 17th, 2015, is at the Mount Madonna Center in Watsonville, California. It's also filling very quickly, and it always sells out. For information and phone registration, you can call our retreat manager, Judy Ross, at 703-401-0871. And Judy will be happy to answer any of your questions and take your registration. Or you can go online to JanineRoth.com. You know, I'd also encourage you to check out Janine's Facebook page, www.facebook.com/JanineRoth. You can connect with Janine, and every week she posts teachings and insights for you to read and comment on. And, you know, it's a great place to join the dialogue with other people like yourself. I hope you know about Janine's online courses. There are two online courses, each with 8 90-minute recorded audios. Janine takes you through the program step by step, and you get downloadable summaries to use as a workbook and lifetime access to the teachings. You can get it streaming online, or you can download it yourself. And again, at www.janineroth.com, you'll find out all about that. Really, really glad you've joined us. We'll hear from Janine very, very shortly.
Welcome, everybody. Hi, welcome, and good evening. I'm very, very, very glad that you're joining us. There are about 2,000 people on the call from all over the world, and I'm just thrilled that we all want to learn how to be fierce about being kind to ourselves. So, let's start with a little bit of centering and grounding. Centering and grounding. Just take a moment to breathe a couple of breaths, looking around at the room that you're in, the place you're in, the objects in the room that you're in, just getting yourself where you actually are so that your mind and your body, your heart are all in the same place. If you're distracting yourself at the moment the way many people do and the way most of us tend to do, we scan the internet, we look at our Facebook page, we brush the cat, we walk to the refrigerator. Allow yourself to have this time uninterrupted, unobstructed. It's not that long. And if you allow yourself to take it in, you can absorb the information, you can let it land. So take a breath or two to let yourself do that. To let yourself arrive. To let yourself be here. With me, with us, and with the subject and the topic and the act of kindness. So before I begin answering any questions, I want to talk for a few minutes about kindness itself and what I mean by kindness. And what I mean by kindness, particularly around food and with your body. But also, since what we do with food, we also do in our lives, and the way we treat ourselves with food, we also treat ourselves in our lives. The two are very connected. So the first thing I want to say is that in any situation, no matter what, no matter how much you weigh, no matter how much you've binged, no matter how much you've restricted, being kind to yourself, being tender with yourself, and cherishing yourself is called for. There is not one situation in which being mean or cruel or vicious to yourself helps change a thing. Not one thing. Kindness, and by that I mean allowing what's already here to be here and greeting it, welcoming it, with some degree of openness and tenderness, is always the ground. It's always the beginning from which any true change occurs. And without it, nothing lasts. Nothing you do will last. You can go on a diet because you judge yourself or shame yourself. You can deprive yourself. You can be cruel or vicious to yourself about something you did or said. And all those things will do will be to momentarily stop you. But they won't change you. And since we're interested in true change, true transformation, let's talk about what kindness actually means. So I'm going to talk about it tonight on both the food level and the everything else level, even though the two of them seem to be different. They're actually one, but for the purposes of language, linear language, I need to talk about them one at a time. And I want to say that there's a difference between kindness and self-indulgence. A lot of times people read my books or hear me talk and they say, oh, good, Janine is telling us that it's okay to go out and binge, and that's what being kind to myself is. Or she's telling me I can eat whatever I want whenever I want it, and that must be what being kind to myself is, because the other, which is deprivation and shame and punishment, feels so unkind that I think the opposite is what she means. And that is not what I mean. With food, kindness is eating what sustains you, nourishes you, gives you life, allows you to be magnificently and fully yourself, which means eating foods that your body actually wants. That when you eat them, something in your body says yes. Not just your mouth. When you eat a cupcake, your mouth can say, yes, yay, so glad we're getting sugar now. But your body will probably not be so happy. It might be, but it probably won't be. And without food, it's being able to be, and aside from food, on the non-food level, kindness is being able to be kind to and tender with the parts of ourselves that are reactive, that seem like they're mean, that even get pleasure in somebody else's pain, that are grief-stricken, that are frozen in time. I call these parts, even the part that gets pleasure in somebody else's pain, ghost children, because they're parts of ourselves that got frozen in time and stuck where they are when they first developed. So we can have some mean 8-year-old parts, mean girl or mean boy parts, very sad parts, the abandoned parts, the unloved, worthless parts. So kindness in this instance, in these instances, is being tender with those parts without collapsing under the weight of them. And I'll talk a little bit about that as I get into the questions. The challenge, and I'll say one more thing before I get into the questions, because the questions best exemplify what we're talking about. The challenge between food-related kindness and non-food-related kindness is that the two are inextricably related. It's hard to be kind to yourself if you're walking around exhausted or depressed or spaced out or sick from eating things your body doesn't want but that your mind wants. Again, that's not kindness, eating what your mind wants. That's more like giving in to a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old. But it's not kindness. It's hard to be kind, though, when you're not feeling well from eating too much or too little. And on the other hand, it's hard to figure out how to be kind to yourself on those levels when you feel so bad about many parts of yourself, about things that you take yourself to be, like the mean girl or like the unlovable one. So those two things are related. It's hard to figure out how to be kind to yourself without food, without also being kind to yourself with food, because unless you feel well, there's some part of you that's just not going to care. That's just going to want to space out and forget the whole thing. So let me start answering some questions. This is from Allison. I'm having a really hard time knowing what my body wants when it's hungry. I pause, I feel my belly, I narrow it down to savory warm feeling, but then I assess that this is an emotional want, not a physical. I don't feel allowed to want anything that isn't healthy because logically my mind is saying that's not what your body wants. Your body wants green juice and vitamins and water, you fat cow. I feel like I'm sending out an SOS radio call to my body and only getting static sound back. How do I really hear and know what my body wants? Every time I can't figure out what it wants, I feel like I have two choices. Number one, eat what my mind wants, or two, eat what my mind thinks it should want. And I rationalize that the latter is no better than the former, so I might as well pick the one that tastes better, and then I hate myself for not knowing and not being able to hear my body. Okay, so there are two different parts to this question, Allison. The first one is that knowing what you say is you feel like you have two choices, eat what your mind wants or eat what your mind wants or eat what your mind thinks it should want. So I want to say clearly that this is not about what your mind wants. Your mind will never, ever figure this out. Your mind can never figure out what your body wants. Your body needs your mind, of course, because of all that neural wiring we have and goes through your brain, but your mind is not your friend in this particular instance. Your mind ricochets from the past, from what you once ate that tasted so good, to the future about what you could eat if only you could get a hold of that. But your mind is not connected to your body in this instant. So the way you figure out what your body wants is to ask your body, not your mind. Now, how do you ask your body? If you don't actually know what your body wants, then you try it out. And the way you can try it out is that you go to a grocery store and you walk up and down the aisles. You don't buy anything. You just stand in front of particular foods and you ask your body. Now, a lot of us don't know how to do this. We're not taught to do this. It seems like a silly thing to do. If your body could talk to you about food, what would it say? That's a great question to ask if you don't feel too silly about asking yourself that question. But asking your body what it wants and what it wants to feel good, your body usually knows. Now, if you've been eating a particular way for a very long time, if you've been eating, for instance, a diet high in carbohydrates, not a lot of fat, not a lot of protein, or the other way, a diet high in fat, high in protein, a small amount of carbs, and you're not feeling well either way, then it's time to ask again. And it also might be time to consult a professional and find out what your particular body wants and if there's something particular going on with your body. So there is no good or bad, should or shouldn't, right or wrong about this, about what your body wants. Bodies generally do well on particular kinds of food, just nourishing food, healthy food, food that you gravitate towards, food that after you eat it, and this is another way of finding out, after you eat, how do you feel? Do you feel spaced out? Do you feel depressed? Do you feel tired? Do you feel well and raring to go? How do you feel after you eat a particular food or a particular meal made of particular combinations? That is an immediate clue. So first you ask your body what it wants, and you keep asking it what it wants, and you ask it how it feels after it eats certain foods. You go to the grocery store. You try out different foods. If you can't find your way through that, then it might be time to consult a professional who might be able to work with you and find out why it's difficult to listen to your body in terms of, is there something else going on? Is there a kind of pain you're in that you need to clear up? Is there mind fog there that doesn't have to do with food? Might have to do with the amount of hours you're sleeping every night. Might have to do with reading your computer before you go to bed. Might have to do with your living habits as much as your eating habits. Okay, that's Allison. The second question is, how do you stop the spiraling? And this is from Janine. How do you stop the spiraling out of control feelings that come after you've dieted, lost weight, reached goals, started binging, gained back weight, self-loathing? She put little hyphens in there so that it's all one word. I started reading your books many years ago. I am now 55 and in the past year fell for a food plan, a diet, lost 30 pounds, reached my goal weight, loved how it felt, but over the past year have proceeded to put the weight back on and I'm feeling disgusted. I can't believe I did this to myself again. I know better. This last weight loss scenario set me up with a coach and quick weight loss, but at the end of the day, my coach wasn't there for me when the going got tough, and I felt alone and isolated in my binging behavior like a mad woman. Help. Okay, so I'm not going to go back into the question of dieting and why diets don't work. I've done that a lot. I've spoken a lot about that. I've written a lot about that. I'm sure all of you listening to this call know what I think about diets don't work, that they lead to binging, that they don't teach you to trust yourself, and that you can never figure out what you actually want if you're on a restricted food plan. You can figure out if it feels good or not in your body. But dieting aside, I want to talk about what happens to many, many people when they lose weight and they gain the weight back. When they lose weight, and this happens also for people who don't diet. We call this the fear of success syndrome. And I know this is going to sound wild, but I want to say that some of us, in fact, many of us get very frightened when we reach our goal. Our lives have been so constellated around our weight struggles that without them, we can feel lost and unmoored and alone. We feel like we don't know who we are. What are we going to talk about? What happened to that struggle? Suddenly, what was a big part of our lives is gone, and now we don't know what to do. And so we gain back the weight to have a sense of identity of she who struggles with a weight problem and of being a familiar self. To work through this pattern takes support because, and I want to underscore this, it takes a willingness to tolerate a little bit of discomfort. The discomfort of suddenly being in a different body, of having lost weight, of having your main challenge be gone and of not knowing what to talk about or where to focus your energy. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking, yeah, I really feel sorry for Janine. She spells that with a J-A, by the way. This isn't me making up my own question. I feel sorry for that. I wish that was my problem. If I lost weight, I know I'd feel great. I wouldn't have that problem, but that might not be true. I have worked with hundreds and hundreds of people who have this same pattern. And what it takes to work through this is sensing that when you've lost weight, oh, wow, I feel discomfort. I feel unfamiliar. I feel lost. I feel disoriented. And that's where the proverbial rubber meets the road, because then what? Do you eat to get rid of the discomfort? Because most of us have used food for exactly that reason. And so if you start feeling uncomfortable, even when you've lost weight, there's a susceptibility and a vulnerability to using food again to get rid of that discomfort. And so learning how to tolerate discomfort takes support. It takes guidance. It takes someone or a group of someone's, and I'll talk about support a little later, being willing to sit with you, be curious with you about what that discomfort is. What does it feel like to feel lost? What does it feel like to feel disoriented? Now, I'm assuming, Janine, when you asked this question, that you didn't gain the weight back, although I could be wrong, because you ping-pong the other way from dieting to binging. Now, that could be true, and if that's true, then the answer to your question is don't go on another diet again. Find out what your body wants, and that itself is an act of kindness, what your body wants. Experiment, as I said in the previous question, with different foods. See what happens when you eat those foods. If the weight gain was not about the effect of having been on a diet, then binging, and was about being scared to be at your goal weight, then the answer to your question is to get support and learn how to begin entering into what seem like scary feelings from the outside, but in fact, when you start being curious about them and entering into them, they are just sensations that you learn to be with, be interested in, and that change the very second you welcome them. Okay, so that was Janine's question, and then here's another question. I would like to know, and this is Samantha, Is it possible to really permanently, as in forever, move away from the diet, hate your body mindset once and for all? I go as long as 2 years without succumbing, and then suddenly I find it becomes my world again. So I would not be doing this work. I would not be doing it for the last 35 years if I didn't know in my entire being and without a doubt that it is possible. How do I know that it's possible? Because, number one, as I've written and said many times before, I was the craziest person I've ever met around food. I was insane. I was a mad person. I thought that I was either going to explode from not eating, and from that time I gained 80 pounds in 2 months, or I was going to die from shame. I never thought I would see a day in my life where I wouldn't be suffering and plagued by my hellish, insane relationship with food. And I've now spent the last 35 years free from that. Food never comes up for me as an activity to engage in unless I am hungry. And let me tell you, all of you, that is miraculous. I also know that because of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, by this time thousands, of people I've worked with in my retreats. And I see what's possible for them. I see that for many, many of them, food is no longer an issue. They come in feeling just like Samantha. It's not possible for me. And with time and practice, they realize, oh my God, I get to have my life back. I get to have a whole new life. I get to be somebody for whom food and the desire to eat it is a portal. By that I mean when I want to eat it, it's a signal to me that when I want to eat it and I'm not hungry, it's a signal to me that something's going on that I need to pay attention to. So, yes, it's possible, Samantha. I promise that it's possible. I am living testimony that it is possible. If one person can do it, and this is what I have always believed in, what has guided me forever, if one person can do it, if a person with arms and legs, a body, of course you need a body to have arms and legs, a brain, and somebody as insane as I was around food can do this, anyone can. And this relates to the next question, even though it might seem like it at the beginning. This is a question about eating and particular foods. How do you incorporate this kind of eating with your body telling you it does not tolerate carbs at all? So she's saying, and this is Jackie, saying, my body tells me it does not tolerate carbs at all. She, and I'll continue in the first person, Jackie says, I'm a type 2 diabetic and found that by eating low carb, I'm almost off my insulin and my sugar stays virtually normal. Also, the swelling in my legs has gone away, breathing is better, and 87 pounds came off. If I do eat a higher carb meal, all of this immediately reverses itself. Yet, I feel resentful. I can't just do hunger, fullness, and eat anything I want. Thank you. Okay, so this is a really interesting question, and I get this question in a lot of different forms. In fact, I get most of the questions. I tried to pick, as I went through all of your questions and I read every single one of them, I tried to pick a question from each category of questions because we all struggle with basically the same questions or the same theme. So I'm hoping that even if I don't read your particular question, that there will be a question that relates to your question. So for Jackie, I want to say that isn't it amazing that you feel well? You've lost 87 pounds. You know exactly what your body wants, and yet you feel resentful that you can't eat stuff your body doesn't want. So, and that's how many of us feel. Many of us feel, my body feels better when I eat, a salad, a chicken salad, or fruit and cheese, or, you name it. My body feels good when I eat those things, but really what I want to eat are bear claws and cheesecake and cookies and ice cream, and I am pissed off that I can't eat those things. And so here's what I want to say about that. First of all, I understand it. I understand that because, man, oh, man, those cupcakes and that cheesecake and that ice cream sure looks good, and, of course, it sure tastes good. There's an immediate gratification. But here's the bottom line, or at least here's the way I see the bottom line. You have to want to feel well more than you want a cupcake. You have to want your life back more than you want that ice cream. There has got to be something that you name and you keep naming it, because at times this does get hard. Because when you see those cupcakes or ice cream or cookies, there is going to be a draw and a seduction. So unless and until you are grounded in what you want more than you want anything, what you want more than you want anything. And to me, what I hear from people is that what they want more than anything is to be themselves, to have themselves, to live who they are fully, magnificently, gorgeously, to have their lives back, to know what they were put on the earth to be and to do, to have meaning in their lives, to love fully and with an open heart. We want those things that at the end of our lives, and when it does come to the end, and it will come to the end for every single one of us, we want those things that will matter. We want to know we showed up here on earth when we were here. Now, compulsive eating, meaning eating when you're not hungry and not stopping when you've had enough, is a way that you leave your life. It's a way that you change the TV channel when you don't like what's going on. You just go away. You leave. You bolt, as I said in Women, Food, and God. It's a way you get out of Dodge. And so what we're doing is reorienting. We're reorienting and saying, and let's just talk to Jackie here, ask yourself, why would it be that having swollen legs, out of control insulin, and labored breathing is better than feeling good? Ask yourself if there's something threatening about feeling well, if it opens up too much space, if you don't recognize yourself when you feel good. And this relates, of course, to that question about gaining weight after you've lost weight and how success can feel threatening or disorienting. What's really important, truly important, is to name what you really, really want, Jackie. And although I realize that having legs that aren't swollen, breathing that isn't labored, and losing 87 pounds without eating all those things that your mind thinks looks really good might not be your answer when you ask yourself what you really, really want, I bet that you would answer a variation of, I want to be here. I want to have my life. I want to know what that life is. I want to be myself. I want to feel loved, and I want to feel loving. I want to show up on this earth before I leave this earth. Or as Mary Oliver says in one of her poems, I want to be married to a nice man. When it's over, she says, I want to say I was a bride married to amazement. Who doesn't want to be married to amazement? Okay, the next question. Shoalay. This is about binging. I find that I binge when I'm angry. That is when I feel the most compelled to do it. Usually the anger is due to a feeling of helplessness or ineffectiveness. I recently managed to make the conscious decision to binge or not to. What is the best way to cope with this and not binge? How do I get to choosing not to? And my answer to that, and actually the next answer and the next question, I'll put the two of them together. This is written by somebody who didn't give us her name, only the name Soy Dog. Toy dog. Okay, so she says, or he says, I have struggled with binge eating, especially the last few years, and none of the tried and true techniques work. Do you have any ninja techniques which might help me somatize my intellectual understanding of self-worth? Okay, so my answer to this is that, well, let's go to binging when you're angry. How do you not binge when you're angry? And another way of framing this question is, how do I not eat my feelings? Because that's what binging when you're angry is. You're eating the anger instead of feeling the anger. And so what I would say, and this also goes to Soy Dog, about how do you understand how do you understand your binge eating and how do you not binge eating? You allow yourself to feel your feelings instead of eat them. If you feel helpless, you let yourself feel helpless. And that's what Shoalay said. She feels angry due to a feeling of helplessness or ineffectiveness. So instead of eating to make that go away, to make the helplessness or ineffectiveness go away, you feel what that feels like. And when you do, and this is an inquiry process, and I wrote all about this in Women, Food, and God, and there's an entire segment about this in the Women, Food, and God online course. How do you feel your feelings? You inquire into them. You ask yourself, where are they located? And you inquire into them by going directly into your body. We call it sensation location, sensation location. You sense what the feeling feels like. Does it feel heavy? Does it feel light? Does it feel like it's burning? Does it feel wet? Does it feel dense? Does it feel solid? And you notice where those sensations are, sensation location. Is it in my chest? Is it in my throat? Is it in my belly? Is it in my back? Is it in my legs? And by not acting out the feelings, which is basically eating from them, not repressing them, which would be just, you know, pushing them away and pretending you don't have them, but by being curious about them, the sensation of them and the location of them, they change quickly. I was going to say almost immediately. It has never failed that when I have worked with somebody on the inquiry process, and I do this a lot during our retreats, pieces of it during the eating meditations, also little pieces of it during the workshops. It never fails, well, maybe once or twice, because it's taking longer than, let's say, 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and so we would need to do a longer inquiry. But almost always, within a very, very short time, the very act of being curious about what you were feeling, which is another way of saying being kind to those feelings. At the beginning, I talked about welcoming them, just welcoming them. Oh, I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling helpless. It's sort of like saying, but not in these words, okay, helplessness, here you are. Or, okay, sweetheart, here you are. You're here already. Helplessness is here. Tell me all about yourself. It's treating your feelings, particularly the difficult ones, but also the happy ones, because believe it or not, many of us eat when we're happy because we actually don't know what to do, or it's so unfamiliar that we feel like, oh my God, I'm happy. What if it doesn't last? Okay, I think I'll turn to food, and that way I'll make sure it doesn't last. Instead of having the happiness get taken away from me or end by itself, I'll be in control of it, and I'll take it away myself by eating and bring back the suffering of eating. That way I don't have to face the disappointment or the pain when the happiness goes away. So the way to circumvent all of this is through inquiry, is through being kind and curious about your feelings, where they are, what they feel like. Now, usually at the beginning of doing this, you need support. You need guidance. You need somebody to sit with you, who, or a group of somebodies, as I said a couple of minutes ago, who have absolute confidence in this process and who know for sure that no situation, no matter what it is unworkable. There is nothing that can't be worked through, not one thing. And I am totally positive of that, in the same way that I am totally positive that it's possible to work through our issues with food. How do I know? I know because in my own life, I have been faced with devastating situations, the loss of all of our money 5 years ago, or the death of many people that I've loved, particularly my father. And as a kid, I felt like I wasn't going to live if he died. There was no way I could continue actually being alive if he wasn't. And yet, when he died, I was practiced enough at inquiry, and I wrote about this all in The Craggy Hole in My Heart and The Cat Who Fixed It, even though it sounds like it's just about a cat, it's also about my father, how entering those feelings, the sadness, the grief, the loss, and not eating about them was absolutely new for me and actually helped me move through them quicker. With the other difficult, somewhat devastating experiences in my life, while I was still eating about them, they lasted forever. Because what happened is that each time I ate to make a feeling go away, the feeling never really went away, but more judgmental and self-hating feelings got added to them. So that at the end of eating, I was feeling what I was feeling before I ate, that I was also feeling self-loathing. And that didn't help anything. So there is a way to work through all of this, but it's not through repressing your feelings. It's not through acting them out, yelling at anybody, hitting anything, or anybody, of course, blaming anybody, criticizing anybody or yourself, but through being fierce about being kind to yourself, being fierce about being kind. And how you be kind to yourself is that you start slowly. You start with little things. You start when you open your eyes in the morning. You open your eyes and you notice where your mind usually goes. I know for a long time when I opened my eyes, it was like opening to a litany of what wasn't right, of what was wrong, or as what a friend of mine says, he opens his eyes in the morning and he thinks something's wrong and who's to blame. So when I open my eyes now, I look around the room and I start noticing, oh, I've opened my eyes. I can see. And I become aware of my breath, of my arms, of my legs. I go into my body immediately and out of my mind. Because as I said before, the mind is not your friend. You cannot rely on your mind to tell you the truth. The mind just keeps rattling on about what's wrong. The superego, which is part of your personality structure, keeps telling you how you are wrong. And so going into your body, sensation, location, even when there's no big feeling there, that's very helpful. I'll talk in another moment or two about some other small steps to take, but I want to talk about the support part of all of this, because Marie has asked the question, can you tell me how to get support, and can you tell me the difference between the workshops you teach, like the one in San Francisco in March, and the retreats you teach? So just a few words before I talk about the workshop and the retreats about support. I believe in getting as much support as you can possibly get, both free support in terms of buddies, people you know you can call anytime for support, support groups, so free support in the terms of buddies and or support groups that you might know about that are in alignment with what you want to be supported in yourself. So you wouldn't go to a dieting support group if you didn't want to diet. You wouldn't go to a support group that restricted foods if you didn't want to be on a restrictive diet but wanted to find out what foods that your body actually wanted. Support, I just can't talk about support enough. I have so much support still in my life, both through a couple of buddies or friends who I have set times with to speak and do inquiry with, or else just call when something's going on and I know they will be there for me, but also to retreats that I go to twice a year or sometimes three times a year, and also a support person, a guide that I work with. So I believe in as much support as you can get, both free and as much as you can afford. As one of my students said recently, because without it, my life isn't worth very much. We live in a crazy, crazy culture that encourages you to look outside yourself, that encourages you to think the answer is out there, that encourages you to believe that when I get thin, when I am successful, when I am famous, when I meet somebody, when I get a job promotion, when I live exactly in my dream house, then I will be happy. I have never, ever, ever met anybody for whom that is true. It's never been true for me. I kept thinking, when I get this, when I get that, when I get this, when I get that, I will be able to relax. No. It is an inside job. And because we live in the culture that supports that continued thinking, you need a lot of support that doesn't go along with that thinking. You need support that really is willing to look inside and support you in showing up on this earth while you're still here. In terms of the question that Marie asked, the kind of support that I offer, a workshop in a couple of weeks in San Francisco and a retreat coming up in May. The workshop I offer every other year in San Francisco, the retreat I offer, our retreats we offer twice a year. A workshop is like dim sum. It's when you allow yourself to get a taste of everything. Another way of, or a taste of everything in terms of the work that I do. It's a night and a day. It's not a very large commitment. It's a big financial commitment, but it's not a large commitment in terms of time. The retreat, of course, which is almost 5 days, is 5 days, is a bigger commitment, and that's an immersion experience. The workshop is like getting a map of the territory, whereas the retreat is actually walking the territory. In the workshop, you're with many, many people, as you are in the retreat, who all long for and want the same thing. But you're basically testing out, does this approach knock on the door of my heart? And you test it out by doing it. And you do it at the workshop. And because I do many different kinds of things at the workshop. At the retreat, you're in an immersion environment. It's a 24/7 environment. You're away from your day-to-day life. You are in an eating meditation with me every single day, sometimes twice a day, looking at your relationship with food, what you put on your plate, what in you took that food, and I work with many people individually at every meal with the exact food they put on their plate. And those are spectacular, amazing, transcendent meditations. And then there's a talk with me, and then there is some movement, and there are small groups every day where people have individual process work, and then there's the evening with me in which we do some kind of non-didactic work after the retreat. And this is what's important to know, because this is what leads into the question of support. We offer many, many, many kinds of support for retreat students. Calls with me once a month, small in-person weekends with me that are only open to retreat students, small groups on the telephone. We divide people up, or we ask you to divide up into buddies, and we give you a list of questions to ask and a structure for the buddy call. Those are just a few of the ways that we offer post-retreat support. I think what's important, Marie, and this actually goes for everyone, because the issue of support is so important. I really can't emphasize it enough. People get sick of hearing me talk about it. But I just heard from one person who left the retreat. Our last retreat was in November. She left feeling as if she had broken free, as if a lifetime of food patterns was absolutely over. She knew where to go. She knew how to do it. She didn't need support in doing it. And it was over for her during the time she was at the retreat, which is another reason why it's so fabulous to come to a retreat and a workshop, because you get a taste of freedom. And once you get that taste, you know it's possible for you, and you can never not know it's possible. But what this person said to me when I saw her 2 months after the retreat was, I didn't believe you when you said it was going to take support after the retreat. I didn't believe you. I felt so free and so ecstatic that I thought it was going to last forever. But because she entered back into the hoopla we call our lives, with the demands on our time and the emphasis on having it be out there and everybody doing some kind of emotional eating, more or less, because as I said in Women, Food, and God, we've all got a shtick with food, It's very hard to do this without support. It just is. I wish that weren't true, but I have found that to be true in my own life, and I see it over and over and over again with people who come to workshops and who come to retreats. The need for support is crucial. Other ways we offer support, of course, is through the Facebook page, which I'm sure Matt told you about, to come and join our Facebook page and just talk to us on Facebook, and also through our website, where there are a lot of articles. The online course, of course, is another way of getting support for yourself and doing it with a friend so that the two of you do it together. Everything, anything you can do, do for yourself. Why? Because you are worth it. Because you are tender and holy and precious. Because you only have this one life. Because you don't want to miss it. Because it's your life. Here you are. It's another day above ground. And why miss even one single second of it? Why miss a second of it? So support is really important, I would say the most important thing. In terms of other small steps, and by the way, you can get support for yourself right now. Go to the Facebook page, sign up for an online course, sign up for the workshop. Find a buddy that you can talk to two or three times a week. Do something. Do three or four things. But don't let another day go by without getting support. In addition to that, follow the eating guidelines. Most of you know what they are, or they are the If Love Could Speak guidelines. They are, if love could speak to you about food, it would say, sweetheart, honey bun, my little darling, eat when you're hungry. Because when you're not hungry, food doesn't taste so good. Stop when you've had enough. Because if you eat beyond full, you'll feel sick. And love would never want you to feel sick. Eat what your body wants. Because why would love want anything for you than to have that body sustained and nourished? And take joy in it. Was a laser version of the eating guidelines. There are seven of them. You can find them in Women, Food, and God. I think they're probably on our website, too. And they're also in the second online course, the eating guidelines course. But those are the laser version of the guidelines. You follow those. You open your eyes in the morning. You come into your body. You notice what's good already. You list five things that are good 5 seconds after you wake up. One could be, I open my eyes. The second could be, my arms and legs still move. And then you could list three more things. But you start grounding yourself in goodness. And the last thing I would recommend is a couple times a day, take a few conscious breaths. By that I mean stop, take a deep breath all the way from your feet all the way up through your body and back down again. This is a practice of Eckhart Tolle's that I've loved and incorporated into my life and encourage everybody to do. The overall thing is that kindness, being fierce about being kind, is kindness. You know, somebody asked me and I didn't list that question, but she wanted to know what was the difference between kindness and discipline. Discipline has a terrible name for it. Or what was the difference between being fierce and being disciplined? She didn't put it like that, but that's how I interpreted what she said. Being disciplined without kindness is often the same as listening to your superego. you shouldn't do this. I can't believe you did this. What's wrong with you? And the way the first person or the second question I answered, she called herself a fat cow. That is the superego speaking. And being disciplined when you are not being kind to yourself will not lead to change. Being fierce about being kind is, in a way, being disciplined about being kind, but without the superego. It's being kind because you know you deserve it. It's being able to tell the difference between saying to yourself, when you get hungry, and there were a lot of questions about nighttime eating, when you get hungry and you wake up in the middle of the night, saying to yourself, and this is where the fierceness about being kind comes in, and this is different from discipline or just plain old fierceness. Fierceness about being kind is saying when you're not hungry and you want to eat, whether it's the middle of the night or at nighttime or any old time of the day, it's treating that in you that wants to eat like a child, like you would treat a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old. It's saying to yourself, oh, sweetheart, I hear that you want to eat. I get it that you think food would taste great to you now, but here's the thing. You're not hungry. And just as a mother who knows her child is already full and will get sick and miserable if this child eats more, just as a mother needs to say no with a lot of love and a lot of kindness, so do you need to have that kind of idea about kindness. It's not just sweetness and mush. It's also the willingness to know when your mind or one of those ghost children is speaking to you and does not have your best interests in mind, is stuck in the past. And this is the time when the adult comes in, when the adult who knows what she/you want more than anything, which is to live this life you have as fully as you can, which is, as Mary Oliver says, to say that when it's over, you were married to amazement. So it's the willingness to say yes when it's kind to say yes and no when it's kind to say no, and to get support for both of those. I hope to see you at an upcoming event at the workshop in March, mid-March in San Francisco, March 13th and 14th at our May retreat on Facebook. I hope to see your questions there. And mostly what I hope for you is utmost kindness, tenderness, the willingness to cherish yourself. The willingness to cherish yourself, because really, that's what it gets down to. So I am going to unmute the call now so we can all say goodnight. But before I do, I want to thank each and every one of you for showing up for this call, for being here, for being that kind to yourself, to want to listen to what might knock at the door of your heart. And may anything that you learned here or felt, anything that opened your heart, may that also be felt throughout all of us and to all of those who might need that kind of kindness. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.